Got up this morning, looked at my watch, said the 26th. I was typing in the date on the bottom of my notes on my sermon. Watch said the 26th, and it just didn't sound right. I got a calendar laying on my desk there, and I'm looking at it, and my watch was off a day. It was wrong. I thought, well, okay, that means my watch has been wrong the entire month. And then I said, let's look at March. How many days were, look at there, 31 days in March. That means my watch was off all of March as well. It was back into February before I should have had to adjust my watch for the days that would now be missing. And so, that's amazing to me. I made my flights to Africa and back, got to the conference in Portland, made it to church, and somehow or other, I'm running different schedules. But fact is, in our lives, we believe in the truth, we obey the truth, we keep God's word, the truth, but still, within our lives, there are errors that creep in that we don't notice. There's mistakes that we're making. I've had to do church reports a couple of times, and I go to put down one date on it, and the date on the report for attendance is different than what I had on my form, and I had to change it. And I thought, what a fluke. No, it's because I looked at my watch and didn't notice. It took me 2 months to figure out I even needed to change. So we live our lives seeking truth, desiring truth, but at the same time with a measure of error that remains or sometimes creeps back in. John chapter 4, verse number 7. The Samaritan woman at the well. And she said, it says, the woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said, give me a drink. His disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, well, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? The Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. They had set up their own place to worship apart from Jerusalem and their own priesthood as well. Jesus answered and said, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Speaking of salvation now to the woman of Samaria. And the woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with. The well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself as well as his sons and livestock? And Jesus answered and said, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. The water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. He said, it will be in you and it will come out as an everlasting fountain. Now, down in verse number 19, she said, the woman said, well, sir, I perceive that you're a prophet, because he had begun to tell her about her life, things that he could not personally have known. And she said, our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. She said, well, what is the right place to worship? We do it here, you do it there. What's the difference? Jesus said, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. What we know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. The hour is coming and now is when true worshipers, says, won't be worshiping on a hill in Samaria according to the custom and tradition. They won't be worshiping at the temple in Jerusalem according, again, in part to custom and tradition. He said, they will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. So Christ was saying, you know, there is a way, and there is only one way, the true way that you can worship God. He says it's the way of worshiping in spirit and truth. Now, the word spirit is incredibly broad, pneuma. And it can mean the air movement, the wind. It can mean the spirit in man. It can mean the Holy Spirit. It can refer to an angel spirit or a demon spirit. It's a very, very broad term. As it is used in this context, I would see it, it's referencing the fact that, you know, if it's in you as a fountain, it's God living in you. To worship God in spirit, you have to have God's spirit to worship with. There has to be something coming out of you that God put there, being led by that spirit. The word truth, though, is fairly simple. It just means accurate. It means that which is right, that which is true. And so the English translation of that is very specific, and I think everyone can understand what it means. So there's a way in which we are to worship God. John 17, when John begins to talk about worshiping God, and he begins to talk about the truth, and you see it in the book of John, you see it in the later epistles, you see it in his writings in various places. But he begins to say, look, the truth is of God, and those who are not of God are of the world. And so if you're not of the truth, then ultimately you're not of God, and you are of the world. John 17, verse number 14, Christ is praying for the disciples. It's part of what we read at the time of the Passover. John says, I have given, or Christ said in the book of John, I have given them your word. The world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world. They are of the truth, of the Spirit. Just as I am not of the world, sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. And so the reference goes back again. The truth is of God, but to not be of God is to not have the truth and to be of the world. 1 John 4, verse number 1, John again, in the record, some of the references begin to duplicate as he expands on what he is expressing. But there's a warning now here. We're supposed to worship God according to his word, in truth, but John says, be careful about what you pay attention to. Verse 1, chapter 4, beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are of God. Now, John is the one who references being of God, and he compares it to not being of God or being of the world. So you test the spirit to see if it's the spirit of God or the spirit of this world, Satan being the god of this age, this world. Because many false prophets have gone out into the world. He said, by this you know the spirit of God that comes from God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God. Every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God, of the world. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard was coming and now already is in the world. You are of God. You come from God, little children, and have overcome them because he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. They are of the world. Therefore, they speak as of the world, and the world hears them. We are of God, saying we then hear God. We're of God, and we hear him. He who knows God hears us. Jesus Christ said, my sheep hear my voice. John is saying, when we speak, we are of God, and therefore, if you are of God, you will hear what we say. It will make sense to you. He who knows God hears us. He who is not of God does not hear us. And by this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. So we're supposed to make a discernment between that which is true and that which is false. And there's a spirit that goes with it, and we're supposed to understand the difference. Now, when it mentions Antichrist, honestly, Antichrist is only mentioned a few times in the Bible, one as a spirit of Antichrist, one as a more of an individual. I'd like to leave that for a separate sermon. I have been studying the beast and the Antichrist and some of the prophetic materials that relate to it, moon worship, and I've been starting to compile lists when I was even in Cameroon between flights. I'd be sitting there listing scriptures and reading some references. So I'll come back at some point to that, but that's not the center point of my message. But it is interesting. It just says, if you believe that Jesus has come in the flesh, you're of God. And if you do not believe that he has come in the flesh, you are not of God. So I thought about the religions of this world, at least those that we're exposed to, that we know of generally. Both Judaism and Islam deny the divinity of Jesus Christ. They'll accept in some cases that he was a human being on the earth. In some cases, they deny even that. But they reject the divinity of Jesus Christ. God did not come in the flesh, as far as they're concerned. Both Catholicism and Protestantism, I would say, deny the humanity of Jesus Christ. And you can say, well, no, they say he lived on the earth in the flesh. Excuse me. It wasn't God becoming flesh in that sense. If you believe in the Trinity, then you can't kill part of it. You can't have part of it go away because it never stops. If God is one and he's a Trinity, then you can't take part of it and sacrifice him and have him die in the sense that we understand. So the honest answer is none of the religions of this world actually understand who God is. They don't understand it. God's people understand it, and it makes sense. But again, there's more issues to that, going back to the doctrines of the time and Gnosticism and such. But again, that isn't where I want to address my point today. Again, we were reading 1 John 4, and what John was saying, there are things that are of God, and there are things that are not of God, and that we should be able to test the difference and notice and recognize the difference between the two. There are things that are of God, and there are things that are of the world, and we should be able to recognize that distinction as well. You do not want the spirit of the world. You don't want the values of the world. You don't want the dress and the manners and the customs of the world. You don't want that. John is warning us to not go in that direction. Coming back then, John chapter 10, going back to the Gospel of John. It's interesting sometimes when you study something where a particular thread runs through an author of the Bible and in a way that maybe I'd have to say I haven't noticed in the same sense. But John chapter 10, starting out in verse number 14. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and am known by my own. So Christ said, when I speak through my servants, I know who my sheep are, and my sheep know who I am. He's saying they hear his voice. Verse 27, my sheep hear my voice. The members of the body who are being led by the Spirit can understand and recognize the Spirit of God. And they're supposed to also understand and recognize the Spirit that is not of God or the Spirit of this world. Supposed to hear and see the difference. Christ said, I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. Neither shall anyone snatch them out of my hand. No one can take God's sheep away from the flock or deceive them into going into another fold of this world unless they choose to go along of their own will. Satan is not more strong, not more powerful than God. You cannot be deceived against your will. You can only be deceived if you allow yourself to be. I'm not arguing about some date or some technicality. I'm talking about following the Spirit of truth and being on the path that God has led us to. Verse 28 says, I give them eternal life. They shall never perish. Neither shall anyone snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of my Father's hand. It's just not going to take place. You have to jump ship. You have to throw away your crown. You have to walk out the door. You have to separate yourself. No one can do that. You have to choose. It's a bad choice, but again, people still choose the spirit of this world in various ways. But what Christ was saying, he says, I know my sheep. I know them by name. Now, Matthew 25 then shows the sheep in a different context, 10 virgins. Matthew 25, and on this I want to just start in verse number 5. Because there were 5 foolish virgins and 5 wise virgins, but they're all virgins. And they all had oil. So they all portray the body of Christ. And it says, while the bridegroom was delayed, they slumbered and slept. Now, it's okay to rest. When there's time to rest, it's okay to rest. Some of the virgins were able to get up from resting and be ready to go. Some of the virgins were not able to get up and resting and be ready at all. In fact, when they got up, they weren't prepared. It says, at midnight, a cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out and meet him. All the virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out. The wise answered and said, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you. Go to those who sell and buy for yourselves. Obviously, they could not possibly give God's Spirit as it's portrayed to someone else. You have to get that directly from God. While they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other virgins came and said, Lord, Lord, open to us. And he says, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. See, I don't know who you are. Now, he knew them as virgins, and they were part of the body, and they had oil, and they were in company with the other virgins, at least by parable. Christ said, I know who my sheep are. I know who they are. And here, these virgins who were not prepared when the time came, God says, you know, I don't even know who you are. So the message is being sent here, the example is being given, that you have to worship God in a particular way. You have to be led by God's Spirit, you have to discern the Spirit, or you wander off and begin to follow the spirit of this world, the spirit that is not of God, you go the other way. There's only one way to worship, God says. You must worship of spirit and of truth. Now, Revelation 2 and 3 are the messages to the 7 churches. It's not the messages to the world. It's not written to the Gentiles. It's written to spiritual Israel, the church. And every message says, he who has an ear, let him hear. Which indicates that everybody isn't listening. Can he understand, the message says? Can you listen to the message? I give you warning. I give you credit. Can you hear me? And you know what? If you go back to Matthew 25, there would be half of those that said, well, you know what? I really wasn't paying attention. No, I really didn't understand. They weren't worshiping God, being led by God's Spirit. So then if we go back to John, in this case, 3 John, we're coming back to the reference that he continually makes to worshiping God according to the truth. Now you can say, all right, worshiping God according to the truth means keeping the Sabbath. Well, there's people who keep the Sabbath that don't even know God hardly. They know a little bit about God. Well, add the holy days. Fine, you've narrowed it down, but there's people that don't even recognize Jesus Christ keeping the holy days. It isn't a list of do's and don'ts that prove whether or not you know God. It goes deeper than that, but the truth is on a much broader basis. But 3 John, these are not by chapters, these are just the verses. So verse 1 says, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth, beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers. I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. And I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. I really didn't understand how much of a focus John put on those specific things. Verse 5. Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you'll do well, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. He said there are men who go out who are examples and receive them. And they bring the truth, and when you receive them and help and assist them, you become partakers of that gospel message. Fellow laborers, fellow helpers in what goes out. So then he gives two examples. He lists an individual by name who was a very bad example and rebukes his example. And then he lists a man by name who is a good example by contrast. I always thought it was interesting, because we're in a litigious society, that you can never use anybody's name anymore. You cannot say so-and-so did evil and harmed us greatly, Alexander the coppersmith, even though in the Bible that was sometimes necessarily done. But he says in verse 9, he says, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, he could have said, this leading individual from our former association that we used to know back before 19 so-and-so, he could have said that. But Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. He not only called him out by name, he specifically said what the problem was. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds which he does, prating against us with malicious words. Not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. He said, I'm going to make him give account, and if I can come, I'll take care of it. Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, Diotrephes, and his attitude and what he has done, but what is good. He who does good is of God. He who does evil has not seen God. Who is he talking about? He's in Diotrephes has the spirit of this world. It is not of God, as compared to those who worship God in spirit and in truth, discerning the difference. If you never explain the difference, if you never call and show the difference, how are you going to know the difference? So I think there's a time when good and evil needs to be openly addressed. He says, Demetrius has a good testimony from all. He said, here's somebody you can look to. Look to Demetrius. There's an example for you. And from the truth itself, we also bear witness, and you know that our testimony is true. He said, you know us. We've been here. You know that we have been faithful. And we're a witness, and we recommend him to you. So the comments here are made, you have Diotrephes, not of God, and you have Demetrius, he is of God. And Paul openly addresses and explains what some of the issues indeed were in that way. Hebrews 5 then, backing up here a little bit, when it begins to describe in Hebrews what the difference is between a child and an adult spiritually, or being young in your knowledge compared to being mature in your knowledge spiritually, talks about milk and meat, and it begins to describe what that means. Verse number 12. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you've been around long enough, Paul says, where you should have learned the lesson and now be able to not only show by your example, but actually answer the question. You need someone to teach you again. You're still going to grade school. The first principles of the oracles of God. You have come to need milk and not solid food. Everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness because he is a babe. Milk means that you are not actually living and applying these things. You're not putting them in your life and walking through them and experiencing the difference that it makes. He says solid food belongs to those who are full age, that is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. The way that you learn to discern between what is of God and what is of this world is by living this life led by God's Spirit, doing these things, worshiping Him in spirit and truth. And in the process of that, Hebrews is recording for us and showing that this is what brings us to spiritual maturity. And we begin to understand the difference between the attitude of this individual and the attitude of another, between the fruit and example of Demetrius and the fruit and example of Diotrephes. And it makes it very, very clear in that process. So what is being said here? And honestly, the point goes back to as it is worded in other places. Can you hear when someone speaks if they are of God or not? If you are led by the Spirit and they speak to you to teach and they look at the Bible and quote and reference, you should be able to hear if they speak the truth. Can you hear when they speak? Can you see when they live their life by their fruit and their example? Are they of God or are they not? What did they tell you to do? What is their example? Are what they are telling you, is that biblical or not? Is it gossip? Is it slander? Is it selfish? Is it justified in their own eyes? And if you are being led by God's Spirit, you're going to see the difference for yourself. And you're going to be able to make those choices. Ephesians 4, a reference that is strongly worded for the unity and the growth of the church. But it talks about spiritual gifts in terms of gifts that God gives individuals where they're able to then serve the church according to God's will. Not according to man's choice, not according to man ordaining and choosing and making their own decision, but according to what God has given. Verse 11, Ephesians 4, He Himself gave some to be apostles, prophets, evangelists, and some pastors and teachers, or as some translations would have it, teaching pastors. There are different responsibilities that God has given, and it isn't a decision that we make in the sense that I'm going to make you an evangelist and I'm going to make you a prophet, because it can't be done. It simply can't be done. But the purpose of the gifts, I says, are for the equipping of the saints for the work of ministry or service, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Now, if you look in church history, what you're going to find is that the main thing that some of the apostles and prophets and evangelists have done have been not to edify the church by any means. They've been actually contributing to the division of the church. That wasn't the point. That's not why God gave gifts. It's till we come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So that we should be no longer children, babes on milk, tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine, we would be able to discern the difference between that which is of God and that which is not of God, or that which is of the world, by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness by which they lay in wait to deceive. But speaking the truth in love, again, the truth is the point, may grow up in all things unto Him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together, but by every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. Growth of the body does not mean numerical. It means maturity, spiritual growth, overcoming in that way. Can you hear when somebody points you to a man in the church? If somebody is glorifying a man or looking to or pointing you to him, can you hear that when it is said? Can you hear it when some man points you to himself? Can you hear the I statements? I have been in charge of all the most important institutions of the church forever. I have led the church in the strongest and most faithful way, and you should know, and begin to point people to the individual. Now, whether one person points you to another or the other points you to himself, can you hear it? If you're led by God's Spirit, you will hear it. If you're listening, he who has an ears to hear, by God's Spirit and grace, you will hear it. 2 Corinthians 11, verse number 5. The problem we have sometimes is that we have heard the wrong message at times long enough that we're used to it, and it sounds normal, and it cannot be. 2 Corinthians 11, verse number 5, Paul says, I consider that I am not at all inferior to the most eminent apostles. Even though I am untrained in speech, yet I am not in knowledge, but we have been thoroughly made manifest among you in all things. He's talking about others who have lifted themselves up in false ways. He's not just taking a smack at Peter in this case, all right? He followed the context through. He said, did I commit sin and abase in myself that you might be exalted? Because I preached the gospel to you free of charge. I robbed other churches, taking wages from them to minister to you. And when I was present with you and in need, I was a burden to no one. It doesn't say that he didn't take from any church to support him. It says he did not take from Corinth, because they were always comparing themselves among themselves. I am of Paul, I am of Apollos, and he didn't want them to be lifting him up in that way. So he said, I was a burden to no one. What was lacking to me, the brethren came from Macedonia supplied. In everything I kept myself from being burdensome to you, and so I will keep myself. It was his choice. As the truth of Christ is in me, no one shall stop me from this boasting in the regions of Achaia, boasting of his support and the care that had been given in other places. Why? Because I do not love you, God knows. But what I do, I will also continue to do, that I may cut off the opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the things of which they boast. He said, there are men out there that want what you have to give. They want your allegiance, and they want your money. And Paul says, I am going to make so clear the difference between that which is of God, my service to you, and that which is of the world, their position and their approach, that it will be obvious and there'll be no confusion in any way. He says, such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. So like I said, we're not talking about Peter here. We're talking about others who came in that wanted to be lifted up and magnified and have a following. People who were trying to get people to follow them personally so they could have the keys to the account, so they could have the funds and the money and the control. He said, yep, there are people that are doing just exactly that. And no wonder. Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it's no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. So you have false apostles who desired to be regarded. They wanted to be recognized. They wanted the title, the position. They wanted people to look to them and to be given special honor and respect. 2 Peter chapter 2 talks about false teachers. It's just a different reference in a little different way, but 2 Peter 2 and verse number 1 says, there were false prophets among the people. And he's referring back. I'm not sure how far historically his reference would be. He just said there were false prophets among the people. There will be false teachers among you. Who's he speaking to? Speaking to the church. He says, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction. Many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. It says, by covetousness, see, they have something they want. By covetousness, they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time, their judgment has not been idle, their destruction does not slumber. He said, they're doing what they do in order to have your increase for themselves. And they're deceptive. They're false teachers. What did they want? They wanted power and authority, and they wanted the purse. Now, we call that Gentile rule or Gentile dominion or lordship and dominion, because that's all Africa basically is a continent of individuals who are fighting over who gets to be in charge so they can steal the purse. And they don't just steal a little bit and then let the rest to go out there to remain at least seed for the community. No, I mean, they'll take the whole purse and you have nothing. It's just dramatic and amazing to see the culture and in the way that it is set. Now, I say Africa steals the money illegally, and in the United States, they steal the money legally. They just make rules and laws and run the system so that the funnel comes into them. Over in Africa, they just shoot you and take it, or threaten you, or maintain power and control. But honestly, Gentile rule is lordship and dominion. And you know what? Somehow or other, the purse always ends up in the hand that is seeking the power and control. Situation came up on this last trip. It goes back a few years, but it was a situation that I knew very intimately well because it involved Nigeria. We had a leader in Nigeria when I was first over there working for Fred Keller's, who we really had a hard time getting him to simply try to care for and assist the sheep. And the sheep were complaining about the rules and the dominion and the authority that was exercised and the control, and we continued to try to assist and to help, and the individual absolutely would not abide, just would not abide. And so Fred finally made the decision. We discussed, you know what, we're going to have somebody else take his place. So we ordained Dari as an elder. And Dari became the pastor for Nigeria. And the individual was so upset at the fact that that was not given to him, because he had literally demanded it of us, and we had refused, that he turned around and left and walked out the door. Now, it's interesting. A little while after that happened, we got an email forwarded to us from the Home Office. And the individual had sent the Home Office a bill for his services. Now, this is very real. Revocation of affiliation with UCGIA. Transitional costs. Clearing mail, handling, rerouting letters, 80,000 naira, 40,000 naira. This is about 150 naira to the dollar. Handling, rerouting local email, 15,000, 7,500. Rerouting telephone calls, 30,000, 15,000. Time and effort for myself and my secretary, 150,000. He needs to get a cheaper secretary, I think. But, you know, you add it all up, it's 400,000 naira. He sent the bill to the Home Office. And he says, that's approximately $2,830. And then he says, payment can be made either to Western Union, or direct payment of the naira equivalent to my company account. And he gives his name and the account and how to transfer the money. And I'm going, really? You think they're going to send you the money because you left the church and send them a bill for your services? You know, I'm not sure that he thought they would ever pay. So the way he kind of sealed the deal on that is just as he's walking out the door, he dipped into the church bank account and he took half. He took a half of everything in the account and put it in his pocket and walked away. Now, Fred Kellers is really a nice guy. And Fred just says, Mark, we can replace the money. It's over. We have Dari. He will serve the church. And the problem has been resolved. And it need not be something to follow or worry in any way. I said, fine. Now, while I was over this year in Cameroon, and it was referenced to me that a particular Church of God, there's various Churches of God, this individual had been ordained an elder. The man who is a thief and a lord and a master who would not be turned was ordained an elder, and it was announced in the newspaper and posted, and the individual said, have you seen this? You know this man. And so I looked it up, and indeed it was so. So the man now is in the Church of God as an elder and a pastor on a small group of people that represent that church's footprint in Nigeria. Now, I doubt if the men who did that really know his past. But at the same time, the problem is there are places in the Church of God where arrogance is not even recognized. You don't know what it is because you're so used to it that it looks normal, it looks natural. And when the shepherd is out there beating the sheep, it doesn't look strange. It should look strange. Because if you're being led by God's Spirit, you're going to hear the voice of Jesus Christ, or you're going to recognize this is not his way. You're going to see that this is not of God, it is of the world. If you can't see it, it means you're not listening, you're not following, you're not being led by the Spirit. You've gone along your own way. Your watch is off by more than a day and you haven't noticed. It's just simply the way this is. So I actually have a certain amount of sorrow for the individuals who might end up being in a place where they come under this man's authority, because the man is not truly following God's lead. If he's repented, he certainly did not return one naira to us along the way. Going back to John 4, you know, you can't counterfeit worshiping God. You can play the game. You can work your way into position. You can eventually get the title. You can get the authority. You can get control of the funds. But God knows. It's not a game you can play. There are places in the Church of God where individuals, plural, who were not happy with the wife they had or the mate they had, or were divorced and wanted a chance to start over again and it was not going to be allowed, who simply disappeared from one organization, cleaned up all the loose, dirty ends that were inconvenient to them, and then walked in the door to another organization without the encumbrances. They think somehow God is going to give allowance for that. He will not. They will give account for that. But it has happened. I've seen it, and I've seen it in various places. It's not a game, worshiping God, serving before him. You don't get to play it in a way for advantage. There's only one way to truly worship God, and it goes back to John chapter 4, where we basically began. Verse 23. The hour is coming, and now is when the true worshipers, the true ones, everybody isn't true. Everyone isn't doing what is true. The true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. The Father is seeking such to worship him. That's what God's looking for. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth.